Alan Kring Productions presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, Academic Lectures in Business and Economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240, Section 3 for Spring Semester 2018. Lecture 16, delivered on March 26, 2018. The title of this lecture is Free Cash Flow.
Today, free cash flow. Before I start that, just a brief look at markets and a few extensions of what I've shown you before. And I'm going to take you through a little bit of an exercise that I'll carry on for a few days here. But first, let's have a look at the markets, and you can tell me, see if you're reading these good. Okay. Market today, good day, bad day, ma'am?
Great day.
Well. Oh, this is Black Monday. Ah, see, that was a little finance joke there, but and again, heck with you. Well, that is trying to turn itself on. Any companies in the news that would be of interest to an investor right now? Anything? Say? You don't watch? Anything?
Facebook.
What's wrong? Great. Good news. Bad news. What's the problem?
Some apps that you can sign in using Facebook got the
data was mined from possibly 50 million people, and now it seems that Facebook had apps that were actually tracking your phone calls on your Android devices, logging every call you made. Where it was made from, how long it was, to whom you made the call. So Facebook, and then that information got in the hands of a political opposition research firm, a political help firm in the United Kingdom that was working with the Russians and working with Wikipedia, and pretty much helped to decide the election. Well, we'll talk about that in a minute. Let's see how the markets feel about that. But for this day, what do you think? Was this a good day or a bad day, sir? Well, there's the S&P 500 and the Dow 30. Let me back it down just a little bit here so you can see a little more. Whoops. And there's the NASDAQ. Good, bad? Very good. Strong up day. And the question would be, why would that have happened? Any assessments, ma'am, on why that would happen? Yeah, you. Okay. This one's a little bit harder to call. Clearly, the Fed's raising interest rates has spooked the market. And the talk about a global trade war. Generally, markets tend to love trade wars where we're kicking the butts of our competing countries until the trade war turns into a global recession. And then they get fussy about that. So some of this effect could very well be nothing more than the euphoria that comes at the beginning of a trade war where we're teaching all these countries whose boss, like China and Canada and Europe, only later when they retaliate do we see that all of the nations of the earth who trade with each other begin to suffer terribly from it, as happened in 1929 with the Smoot-Hawley Tariff Act. It began with a lot of cheering and yay, yay, America first, and it ended with a global depression. This may be partly that, but it also might be the fact that now that this whole new tariff system is in place, Washington is qualifying its enthusiasm and talking about making deals for countries to avoid the big tariffs. It's hard to tell, though. This is just a very strong up day. And notice something interesting. There was some political stuff about the president that's been very stormy over the last couple of days. But markets really don't give a rat's ass about that. Understand this, and I'm going to bring this up with Facebook too. It does not matter whether a company is full of corruption, it lies, it cheats, it breaks laws. What matters first is, does it get caught? And even more than that, getting caught really doesn't matter. What really spooks markets is when it gets caught, do politicians suddenly get self-righteous and turn up the screws on regulation of an industry? Then the markets care. But at the beginning, nothing like, well, Facebook did this. No one really cares about that. What really matters, though, is what this does to Facebook's optics in its end users' eyes, and also what it's going to do in Washington when they start to call for regulation of social media. So, right now we had a very strong up day, 2.75% uptick on the Standard & Poor's 500. A little more than that on the Dow 30, and a very strong update on the NASDAQ. So now the next question is, what's been going with Facebook? First of all, if you are worried about what's going to happen to Facebook, well, a lot of it, interestingly enough, has already happened. The markets swiftly impound their expectations of effects. So that's not really going to do much to say, well, now I'm going to sell my Facebook stock. Well, it's too late for that. That was
yesterday's news.
Now the question is, what's going to happen from here? Notice that there was a bear run early in the day today, but then the bulls came back, and by the end, they were in control of this market. They were very much in control. So looking at the year to date, we should be able to see, well, yeah, this is the year to date. So this is the year to date. So interestingly enough, the bulls have taken back over. Oh, most of what happened was a big problem. Yeah, but really, who cares? As long as Congress doesn't get involved, we're going to be okay on this. Now, the next thing to look at, I'm going to pull this up, and I have this on mine, but let's look at the short interest on Facebook. Okay, now I'm going to have to expand this so you can see it a little better. Okay. Notice that the short interest has actually not changed all that much from the end of February to just a few days ago. The short interest really, but now we need to see if we can find a little bit finer reference to Facebook, because this was before the excitement. Okay, here we go. Facebook. Short interest. Well, it's really not that big. It's not that strong right now. Percent of the float is still pretty small on it. So now we're going to do something. FB. Standing at 160.06 on the close. suppose that I believe that there is more bad news about to come. I'm going to take a short position. I'll show you how you do it, okay? Tell me. Give me a number that you think Facebook might fall to. Don't get dramatic. Say? Oh, that's dramatic. I'd like to see that because then Mark Zuckerberg would kill himself, but that's a little less dramatic than that. Being a coward about this and also being a little bit cynical, you know me, I'm not a cynical person at all, but being a little cynical about how righteous markets can get, I think Facebook is going to make it to 150 over the next week. So, short, 1,000 share FB at market cover at 150 or better. That's a short position. What that means is I wanted them to buy it at the market. If the market is, by the time they get there, 161, whatever, buy it. Buy 1,000 shares, 10 round lots. And then what I want them to do is if that price falls to 150, if it misses 150, it goes 149, whatever is better as lower than 150, I want that broker to close my position. So in other words, I'm going to essentially borrow 1,000 shares of Facebook. And then what I'm going to do is I am going to sell those shares at one, whatever the market is, 160, 165, whatever. And then I'm going to hold those shares and, I'm going to sell those shares and then I'm going to hold those shares until it reaches 150 and then I'm going to buy them back and give them back. If my position works, and let's say cover, it actually, the cover occurs in 4 days at 150 on the button, what will happen is that I will have pocketed 160.06 times 1,000, which will be 160.60. That's my gain. And then it falls to 150. Buy them back. And what I do is I will pay $15,000 and I will pocket $1,060. And my commission would be about 5%, let's say 5%. So I'll be okay. I made some money. If Facebook does what I am expecting it to do with my short position. Okay? Is it going to do that? I don't know. Notice that the tighter your cover versus short is, the less you're going to make, the more likely you're going to win, but also the more likely you are to not make anything off it after your commissions. So you've got to find a balance on the spread. Yeah. Say that again. No, it's 10 shares. Wait. 1,000 shares. 1,000 shares is 10 round lots. What are you seeing? A 1,000. Okay, 1, 2. Oh, did I do that? Yeah, I had meant to do it as a round lot. Well, how nice. Okay, that scares the hell out of me. See, that's the kind of money, if you go wrong with this, the technical term is you're taking an ass beating. I was going to do a round lot, and apparently my mind fuddled up there, and I did 10 round lots. Wow, that is a hard position. You're not going to be able to do this unless you have an account with your broker that shows that you can handle this kind of action. In other words, you've got enough in a money market account or somewhere so that the broker can get his or her money back as fast as possible. So in a situation like this, this would not be where a beginner would start. But you would put money into a money market account. That's why when you're going to start investing, if you want to play some markets and do some interesting things, you don't just use all your money to buy stock. You keep some of it in a money market account so that they see that you have the ability to do some things like shorts or doing some options trading. And so in a case like this, you would want to, I wouldn't have done, if I had thought my way through this instead of, I had my paper here and I thought I could do it without my little paper. And so in a case like this, they would never let you do this without quite a decent amount of money in your money market account. Or they could access your regular bank checking account to get their money out. But it's something to keep in mind over the next few years of your life. But be careful. Markets don't do what you want them to. They have their own sense. And in a case like this, just because Facebook has got egg on its face, book, doesn't mean that this is going to be problems. Listen for talk about regulation. Probably it's not going to happen because, not at least until the Congress changes. Then you could start to hear talk of regulation. That's when it could get to be an interesting play, because the social media platforms like Facebook, Twitter, those kinds of places might then begin to have markets consider them to be a little more risky than they were in the past. Facebook made one of the things, interestingly, is that the markets are still figuring out. We don't know how much of Facebook's revenue stream comes from all of its activities giving your private information out, selling it. We just don't know for sure how much of that. If it is a substantial amount, and if Congress begins to put regulations on it, that affects revenue of the company, and at the bottom line, it affects the stock price down the road. So if you start hearing serious talk about regulation, that's when you start to think about short positions. But for now, it's too unpredictable. Really is. I want to show you something interesting here. Short interest, NFLX. This is a little worrisome. I'm just showing you how to think about these. I want you to come out of here with a little bit more educated gut than completely clueless gut. I don't like gut thinking, but I like it when it has educated thought behind it. Netflix has a short interest days to cover of 2.4. That's not all that worrisome. But that percent of the short interest as a percent of float is up to 5% of the company's stock now. And it's just a little concerning, that's all. You're looking at one that is a one to watch. If that short interest, the days to cover, starts to get a little bit friskier, pushing up towards 3, 4, I begin to get really interested. And if the short percent of float gets to 6, 8, you don't want it to get too high, because then you're never going to get out of your short position alive. But if that starts showing a little more muscle, and in a sense, it's not even why this is happening. It is that it is happening. You can look into it in the background and see, say, all right, what are these bears seeing that is worrying them in this? Obviously, let's look here. Well, obviously, Netflix is doing well. You see how the bulls and the bears are both having their fun? The bulls say, oh, this is a really good stock. Look at this jump. But look at something interesting here. It's standing at 320. Projection is that it is going to be a loser over the next year, even by, though the bulls are all kinds of excited. And the beta is very high on. This is a serious beta. This is almost half again as volatile in a well-diversified portfolio as the market itself. And that PE ratio is nosebleed. So there is, although the bulls are still all kinds of excited about this stock, the bears are saying, okay, first you've got a highly, very risky stock with a stupidly high PE ratio, no dividends. So anything you're going to make off this stock is going to come through capital gains on reinvestment of the cash flows, residual cash flows. And we're saying, okay, at 320, there's someone projecting that the stock is going to fall by $40 over the next 12 months. That is probably why that short interest is getting a little bit tough. I hadn't even looked at Netflix until I looked at the short interest and I came in here to talk about it. And now that I'm looking at the numbers on it, well, this is going to be a war between the bulls and the bears. And we'll see. The problem is you can't short on something like this, really. I mean, that's a long-term projection. And right now, the market is too happy with how things are going to make money off a short position over a week or so. Anyway, there you go. That's some of the stuff that is going on. Now, let me take you on a little tour here.
Question.
Yeah.
What is like the longer-term shorts? Like, do people hold them for longer?
Oh, you wouldn't do it like that. You do it with options. And I'm not supposed to teach you about options. And so I am going to. Options are interesting because they are risky, but the risk is really, I mean, if you don't do it stupid, you're going to lose a couple $100 or you're going to make a little money. And also options are the way to hedge your bets on stock. Like, for example, I can show you how to put together a little options package so that you would not make too much money or lose too much money on a stock position. I could also make it so that you would win or lose only if there were a dramatic stock price change. This is the whole basis of protecting yourself. Or I can make it so that you can, instead of just selling stock when it gets to a certain level, you can take a position so that you can still hold on to it and you won't lose too much if the stock price collapses on you again. So there are all kinds of nice little tricks that are longer term that you can do with options. Short interest is short to a certain extent. So that's the thing is that I will show you a little bit about this, even though they say, well, you're not at a cognitive level where you can understand this. Well, I've met a lot of brokers who aren't at a cognitive level where they understand cornflakes, and they can do those like nobody's business. Anyway, that's an interesting thing. These are percent changes, right? No, these are number changes. I don't get it. Okay, one way or the other. Let me close this off. But what I'm going to do now, I'm going to go over here to SEC.gov, and I'm going to pull up, for lack of greater creativity, Netflix. NFLX Financials. And there's a 10K. By the way, I'm glad I saw this. I guess I did know this. I might even mention it. This is a 10K. So there's no Qs after this. So this is the freshest public report the company has given. The KA, they did some kind of an amendment to the K. Be careful about just grabbing a 10K. Make sure there's not a KA that has something that would materially change the financials of the company. In this case, it's nothing that's big. But always watch out, because if a company does some kind of funny thing with its financials and it gets caught and it gets smacked by the SEC, it will have to redo those financials to recognize it. Okay? So just keep that in mind, that that KA might be something to keep an eye on. Now, these other ones, these were these SC3Gs and 3GAs. The A means amendment. These are stock that is given to insiders or to others for some one reason or another. Now, this is usually a small amount compared to the total float, but you might want to have a look at it. Who are they being generous to, and why are they being generous? And how does this affect the total stock outstanding? Because, in other words, as more stock gets issued, the number of shares outstanding gets bigger, which means that the market cap, which means that the earnings per share begin to slide. But anyway, moving on from there. Okay, now the financial statements. I'm going to try to do this on the fly here. Statement of comprehensive income. Nope. Really? Okay, statement of operations. Okay, here we go. Now, the problem here is that this company, Netflix, is not reporting something in these lines right here. We got revenue, cost of revenue. And that would bring us down, if they used to put it in the line, that would be your gross income. Revenue minus cost of revenue, but a lot of companies aren't doing that anymore. So we go right down to what are called the selling, general, and administrative expenses. Marketing, technology and develop, general and administrative, and operating income. And then we get the operating income, which is revenue minus cost, and then minus these SG&As. Operating income is also known as EBIT. Here's the problem with Netflix's financial statements as far as we would need them. Does anyone see a line there under cost of revenue and above operating income that you really would like to know that they're not disclosing in this particular financial statement? Do you see it? They're not disclosing depreciation, okay? It's hidden in one of those others, probably in general and administrative expenses is where they are, where it's hiding, but it's not there. And we need that as finance people, because we need to add that back in order to get cash flow. So, the one place I could imagine, consolidated balance sheets. Well, this just bunches my boxers, because they're not even showing it their accumulated depreciation period over period, from which I could extract it. So, statement of cash flows. Let's see if we can find a depreciation. Well, there we go. 71,911. We find it there. Okay? Okay. Now let's go back up here. Free cash flow. Now, we usually do this on a project-by-project basis. But free cash flow. The first thing we're going to need to know is revenue minus costs minus depreciation times 1 minus our taxes. In other words, what we keep after taxes. Now, the cost would also include interest expense as well. Okay, cost would be actually interest expense in there too. Okay, now, once we've got the actual amount of real money, of accounting money, that was caused taxes, we add back in the depreciation because it wasn't real, except for the fact that it shielded us from some taxes. Let me look here. Then minus capital expenditures minus the change in net working capital, which is current assets minus current liabilities. I'll turn on the overhead. And I've got to put something in here. I'm saying this incorrectly. That is net working capital. The change in net working capital is net working capital for the current period minus the net working capital for the just previous period. Now, I'm going to show you this in a real situation in this one. Don't get excited about how difficult this looks. Okay, now, capital expenditures. Let's pull some information out here. Capital expenditures. My best way to take a stab at the capital expenditures. Am I on the statement of cash flows here? I can't see. No. Cash flow, okay, operating activities, nope. I really, really want to see a number here, and I'm not seeing it, so we'll have to do it another way. Okay, we'll just look at the balance sheet. Okay. Let me see if you see it. Approximately how much did Netflix spend on capital expenditures for the just reported year? Do you see it? It's in there, but you have to tease it a little bit to get it. Do you see how much they spent on capital expenditures this year, approximately? I'll give you a hint. It's about $60 million. Are those millions? Yeah. So, look there. Well, actually, that's not correct. There are three lines, and I'm not correct on that. Look at non-current content assets. This just past year, they were $10,371,055 minus what they were a year ago, $7,274,501. That was what they spent on content this year, capital expenditures. But there's a little more to it there. That would be what? 4, 5, 4, and then 10 minus 4 is 6, 9 minus 7 is 2, 0. $3,026,454. That was what they spent on new content, capital expenditures. But there were some other things they did too. Property and equipment. They also added property and equipment too, to the tune of $319,404 minus $250,395. 11 minus 5 is 6. So that we'd have to add that in too to their capital expenditures. And then there was one more there. Other non-current assets, $652,309. And the year before was $341,423. So that would be 6, 7, 8. Am I doing that right? Yeah, 1. That number. There, all those together are how much they spent on capital stuff this year. Okay, do you follow that? Now, I would not make it that hard, and it's not that hard in your homework. This is a more of the real kind of thing you might encounter. I'm not a real fan of this financial statement. It's leaving it more to my work to try to figure out what's going on instead of, well, you know, the transparency, yes, it's there, but sometimes there's transparent, and then there's a little bit of fog on the glass here. So anyway, putting all those together, the capital expenditures for, and I'm going to use a calculator to get this, calculator, would be 3026, 454, plus 69,009, plus 10,876. Okay, so their capital expenditures this year were 3,106,339. I hope I did that right. If I didn't, whatever. Okay, now, taking this around the grinder, let's do the actual cash. Let's do the free cash flow. Revenue minus costs. Revenue for this company. $11,692,713 minus the costs, and that probably included the depreciation as well. So that would be minus the $7,659. I'm writing this out so you can get this in your notes, comma 666 plus 1278 022 plus 863 568. That probably includes, like I said, the depreciation was, it has to be embedded in there. But we'll still have to get the number to add it back in. Okay, so now, taking all of that together and being very sorry, I'm going to put this in the memory save and then clear it And we're going to go 11692 minus 7659 minus 1278022 minus 863568 863568 1891. So this whole piece right here comes out to be 1,891,457. Right there, okay? Now, I'm going to take a stab and say that this Netflix is in the 35% marginal tax bracket. I might be wrong about that, but I would be surprised if I am. So now, what we can do, let me erase this. And I'm going to write these numbers up here so that you have as detailed notes as you need can. And like I said, you won't encounter anything quite this tedious in your assessment problems. 1,891,457,000 times 1 minus 0.35. Now, add back that depreciation. Does anyone remember what the depreciation was? Let me go back here. Statement of cash, consolidated statement of cash flows. It was in there. Come on, statement of cash flows. Where was the depreciation? Oh, look at this. I could have gotten that wrong. Look at this. Do you see this? There are three pieces. Depreciation once, but there are two amortizations. And then there's another one right here. So that's nasty. There are actually a bunch of pieces. Man, this company is... this is way too much like work. Okay, clear. Okay, so in other words, the total that really wasn't money, but it was what they put in their financials, was 6,197,817 plus 60,657 plus 71,911. Six three three zero three eight five. So this one is 6,330. Is that right? Oh, I didn't mean to do that. Shoot. And these are in thousands. Look at that amortization. Do you see that? Look how much amortization they took. Am I reading a $6 billion amortization? Wait. Thousands. Okay. Hundreds, thousands, millions, billions. How could they have taken that much amortization without causing a red flag from hell to come up? Okay. Okay. Right there. minus their capital expenditures, which were the 3,106,339, and then the net working capital. Now, we're going to do current assets. We're going to do the change in net working capital. Net working capital, 2017. Net working capital, 2016. So that one, net working capital, 2007, this is way too much like work. Okay. Now, going to the consolidated balance sheet. Oops, I didn't mean to do that. There we go. Net working capital for this year was 7,669,974 minus the current liabilities, 5,466,312 equals 2,203,662. Now for 2016, I'm sorry, we would have clear. Okay, so. Oh, I didn't mean that. Okay, so now we would have your current assets, total current assets, 5,720,720,291. Okay, minus your current liabilities, 4,586. Equals 1,113,634. And then we take the difference of those, and that's your change in net working capital. That's interesting. Notice their net working capital skyrocketed. So we would do 662 minus 1,133,684. Change of net working capital 1,069,978. Notice that their net working capital went up, and that is going to be a drain on free cash flow, minus 1,069,978. That was way too much like work. There. That's how you get free cash flow. Now, you'll hear me. This is the one that finance people care about. This is not profit. This is not the accounting number at the bottom line. This is how much money actually flowed in the company. And we compare that year over year, and of course, by that time, we're using Excel spreadsheets to do this, but let me crank this out here for you. I still am weirded by that amortization. That was insanely large. How they're getting by with that kind of amortization. But anyway, there you are. 1,891. Okay, 1,891,457 times 0.65 plus 6,330,785 minus 3,106,339 minus 1,069,978. This is what the markets look at, not the profit. Whatever this number comes out to be, this is how much actual money is happening. $3.384 billion. We would compare that year over year, and my guess would be that Netflix's net cash flow, its free cash flow, is deteriorating. Because if I remember, I did this for last year. The free cash flow was a higher number than that. Now, interestingly, that's not a death knell. But as I had told you in a previous, early in the semester, we had a bunch of alumni who had finance alumni and others who were in financial stuff come and have, we had a luncheon engagement where they had a discussion panel with these professionals who used to be here, who got their degrees here. And several of them in the finance department were in the finance in Treasury at Caterpillar. And what they said was that for years, Caterpillar had been relying on profitability, the profit number, that bottom line, earnings per share, total earnings. And slowly, the company was getting sicker and sicker. There was a clear indication something was wrong. But look at this profit. We keep doing better every year, profiting. And finally, it got to the point where some of the more the newer finance students coming out kept pointing out, we've run cash flow numbers, and the cash flow situation with Caterpillar is deteriorating year over year over year. And then they even went back and they said, we can even identify where it's happening. A lot of it's in this net working capital. It just keeps increasing our current assets due at the expense of free cash flow. And also, we just keep spending and spending and spending on capital expenditures. And in other words, we're bleeding the company of actual dollars. And it was maybe, this was maybe about 5 years ago. They said that they just completely overhauled. They said no longer do they look at the profitability. They look at the free cash flow. And they say we've got to keep that going up year over year. And it gets to the point where companies are really grasping this now. They will slow down paying bills. They will accelerate collecting bills. They will not just, oh, this is a good idea with a positive NPV. They say, how does this impact cash flow? Those are the things that will improve the cash flow and finally, ultimately, improve the situation of the company in the long run. And Caterpillar got the message, but did they get it in time? Well, Caterpillar's not going to die. But at the same time, let's look at something here. I'm going to take you back to Cat. Now, this might not show enough of it. This might be a little too far out. But notice over time, as they began, they were slumping here. But as they have begun to pay more and more attention to free cash flow instead of just pure profitability, notice how that long, slow, up and down slide and decline, finally in the last 2.5, 3 years maybe, it's begun to show in the investors' confidence in the company's long-term future, long-term profitability, for a lack of a better word. And that will go in almost any business. The more that you hear an obsession with profit, the more likely that company is ignoring the far more important thing. Do we have money flowing in? Not accounting numbers looking pretty in black ink. Do we have money flowing in? To give you an example, one more. My own company. I am profitable. My company is profitable. But it is dying because the free cash flow is terrible. Why? Because of the capital expenditures. I have to keep buying and increasing my inventory for the shows, and that is capital expenditures, and it's bleeding the company of actual money. So even though it looks like I'm doing okay on paper, the accounting looks damn, I must be some kind of successful son of a bitch. The company, if I can't stop this process, if I don't stop getting more frames, if I don't stop producing new artwork, my company's going to die at the end of this year. It'll be over. And then I'll be out there on the street begging for money from graduates of Illinois State University who take pity on stupid professors of finance. That's all I have for you today. I thank you.